this is Dame Lillard, isn't it, Kyle?
Yeah, it sure is. You knew that?
Just because you just said that in my ear about 13 seconds ago.
Oh, okay.
But it makes it sound good to all the kids.
That was the goal there. I thought you peeled back the curtain to
it. I did a little bit. That's you trying to make me look good, and I screwed it up. Sam Amick at 7:35 USA Today. Katie Christensen's coming in for her regular Tuesday appearance at 8 o'clock. Eric Armstead's going to call us at 8:30 of your San Francisco 49ers. Got a lot of people weighing in on the best fan, most diehard fans in all of American sports. A lot of Bills mafias in there. See, people say Packers fans are the most diehard. I disagree. Packers fans have had tremendous success. They have a landmark stadium, the best football stadium, and perhaps, I mean, if you went with your Mount Rushmore of American stadiums, Lambeau Field's on there. What would you say? Lambeau, Wrigley, Fenway. I mean, there's not really a basketball one because the old Forum's gone. The old Boston Garden's gone, so those are out. I don't really know if there's a...
Isn't the United Center still there?
Yeah, the United Center's still semi-new in comparison is what I'm saying. I have to figure out a fourth.
The Oakland Coliseum.
Maybe, no, but the LA Coliseum, I don't know. Anyways, point being Lambeau Field is a... People take vacations to go see Lambeau Field. They don't do that to, Hydrox Oreo Cookie Stadium or whatever the hell it is.
Soldier Field's been around forever.
Soldier Field would be a good example. Oh, and by the way, it's called Titletown. So that is not what Buffalo is called. Buffalo is called No Titletown. We'll get back to that later. We got to get to this this article in the Salt Lake Tribune that crossed my path, and I'm sure yours, a couple of D's ago. Tony Jones, who I invited to be on this very program, and he did not respond. Shocker. Published an article, "The Sacramento Kings Are What Happens When You Don't Trust the Process." Calls the Kings the anti-Sixers. They are what happens when tanking goes wrong. A franchise perpetually destined for the bottom of the Western Conference. He referenced former Jazz guard George Hill sending a tweet full of angry face emojis last week. It was after the loss to the Bucks, and so the speculation is that George wasn't happy. My favorite line, and by favorite I mean least favorite line, in this article, quote, "Sources say many of the Kings' veterans were rounded up early in the year and told the philosophy has shifted, that the front office isn't interested in winning and more interested in acquiring a top five draft pick." Now let's look at that just for a quick second. Sources say many of the Kings veterans were rounded up early in the year. Hey, hey, get over here. Hey now. And
they got out the veteran conch.
Right. "Excuse me. Need to let you know. Before we get silly here." Kyle, I can't find that sound. Would you bring it up? "Before we get silly here, just want to let you know we're not interested in winning. We want a top five pick. That's what we're interested in." Now, I can tell you categorically a couple of things here. Number one, veterans were not rounded up and told that they weren't interested in winning and they wanted a top five pick. Okay, that didn't happen. I can categorically tell you that that did not happen. Sorry. Jeez. There was no secret conversation. "Hey, vets. Veterans. Yeah, you, George. Hey, you, Vince. Zach. Costa, Will he? Probably not. We're not interested in winning. Now I can tell you that didn't happen. On the other hand, I can also tell you that I believe. Now, I can categorically tell you the other part isn't true. This next part is Carmichael Dave believes. This is Dave. Take it for what you want. That actually the team is probably more interested in that top five pick than they are in winning this year. Overall, the overall philosophy is develop youth, get high pick, come up with some sort of here's your goals this year, guys. Let's just do this real quick. Here's your Sacramento Kings goals this year in no particular order. Okay, first goal, number one, develop the youth. Okay, there's one. Second goal, get a high pick. Okay, there's two. Which means you can't win a lot of games. Number three, through some form of trade, acquire a 2019 first round pick to replace the one you lost to Philly. And then somewhere down the list is, I don't know, other things. That's it. The George Hill thing is interesting, and I think here's the easy line to draw here. This article is coming from the Salt Lake Tribune. George Hill played for the Utah Jazz. George Hill puts out tweet with angry faces. George Hill is now talking to a reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune, Tony Jones, and telling him off the record that veterans were rounded up and told they're not interested in winning. Later on down in the article, there's speculation that he's not happy. Guy actually says speculation that he's not happy, and then says, not surprisingly, Hill isn't happy, according to multiple sources. And the other veterans can't be too happy either. See, what happened in that line there is you got the reporter citing unnamed sources that George Hill isn't happy, and then using that speculation to further speculate that therefore other veterans must not be happy either. Well, George Hill, along with Garrett Temple, they've been out at doing good things at schools. In fact, Katie was there yesterday, I believe, with Vince Carter doing some good stuff. She'll talk about that at 8 o'clock. George Hill was asked by Sean Cunningham of News 10, ABC 10, about his thoughts on everything and developing the youth and all that. This was, I believe, yesterday. And here's what George had to say. That's not like a guy that would...
He is pissed.
He's terribly pissed. Here's the thing with George Hill. Dude, is he happy? I don't think he probably is. Is part of that unhappiness about himself and his lack of play? Yeah. Does part of him also believe that he is not being put in the best position to display his wares? Sure. But here's just a couple of things. I mean, that was at a charity event last night. He's talking about the rookies learning to embrace and appreciate the opportunity to mold young careers. And here's another thing, too, and this is, unlike this other reporter, I do try to not speculate, especially on stuff like this. But let me just point out that George Hill has missed two games due to personal reasons this year. Covering the Kings for a long time and understanding how they do things, generally when a player misses a game for personal reasons, it's a death in the family. I don't know who and I don't know what, and it's none of my business. But maybe I can just add to the fact that part of the reason George Hill is having a tough year is he's also suffered some personal stuff. Now, that's not your problem, Kings fan. I understand that. Everybody has issues. I get it. I get what you're thinking. And I'm not defending George. Listen, well, I guess I am defending George, but here's the thing. He's not playing well. He's making $19 million a year. But I'm seeing a lot of backseat drivers here, rear viewers, that that over the summer, where was everybody? I did the show the day after the Kings signed George Hill. Where was anyone that had an issue with that? The idea was George Hill would come in and tutor in the backcourt. Zach Randolph and Kosta Koufos would tutor the big men. And Vince Carter would kind of handle Buddy Hield and Bogdan and those guys in the middle. And overall, they do their thing. And Vince Carter's been great at that. Zach Randolph has been perhaps the Kings' best player this year. But George Hill's not playing well. And I think the Kings would probably like to move him at some point. I think that's who they're hoping to package with somebody else to get a first-round pick. But I really don't think George Hill is leaking to the press. I don't buy this one, guys, as much as I like to run with a good conspiracy theory. I don't think George Hill is playing leaky pants with the media. I don't think he's that good of an actor to be upset and tweet emojis and leak stuff to the Salt Lake Tribune and then turn around and go to a charity event and work with these kids. I got to sit right by the bench for the Pelicans-Kings game Friday, and all I did was watch these guys on the bench, probably more than the game. I can tell you right now, I witnessed it with my own eyes. George Hill was as active as anybody when he was on the bench, talking to guys, talking to De'Aaron Fox when he came off the floor, Frank Mason when he came off the floor, telling guys to tuck in their jerseys, moving guys through, standing up, barking out stuff. He's engaged, and you can tell when a player's not engaged. I'd love to run with that. I'd love to run with that rumor. I can't. 4-9 territory is next. Let's get back to football. The Raiders are going to miss the playoffs. We'll talk about that. Niner fan, we got a choice for you. And we got to look at the Green Bay Packers and them getting Aaron Rodgers back. That's all next. Back in four. Sports 1140 KHDK.
Looks like the Raiders will miss the playoffs. Who do we blame it on the most?
It's tough, man. You know, Todd Downing should be the scapegoat, and he will be, and he won't be back next year. You can pretty much guarantee that. But why is Musgrave gone, and whose decision was that? And does that fall on Jack Del Rio? Does that fall on Reggie McKenzie? If you're forcing me into an answer, I'm going to say Reggie McKenzie. He is ultimately in charge of shaping the roster. He is ultimately in charge of staff decisions. The buck stops at the top. That's who it is. So I love Reggie, but I think you got to put a lot of it on him.
I think this is on Del Rio. You can't put it on McKenzie for this 1 year. I think if there are no changes made going into next year, then I think you start looking at Reggie McKenzie. But they need a new head coach. You need somebody in there who's going to maximize the talent that is on that roster.
Second down.
Niner fan, you have a choice. Win out or lose out. Which do you take?
Lose out. I know win out is interesting, and that provides you with a lot of momentum going into next year. But listen, at this point, we don't know, but we have a really good idea. Jimmy Garoppolo is good. That's the point. That's what we wanted to find out. I don't want to see him get hurt. I don't need to see much else. I get the momentum is important. I do.
Sure.
I acknowledge that. I'd rather have the pick position all the way across the board, spend the money, and go into next year still with momentum of understanding that you've got yourself perhaps a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, and I think we might get the best case scenario where Garoppolo looks good over the final 3 weeks, but the 49ers lose all those games. I think 1-2 is their best case scenario here over these final 3 weeks. So yeah, you'd rather them lose out, but not at the expense of Garoppolo's play, because I think that's what's really going to matter the most over these final 3 weeks. If winning is a side effect of him looking really good, then so be it.
Eric Armstead will join us at 8:30. We'll be sure to ask him about Jimmy Garoppolo and the rest of the team. Third down.
No suspensions from the Seahawks-Jags game. Do you you cool with that?
No, that's so dumb.
Yeah, it's really dumb.
Diving at guys' knees, attempting to go into the crowd. There's no excuse for what Jags fans did, and I hope they find Absolutely. The Jags fans that threw stuff, and I hope they're banned from that stadium. But it's not an either-or. They're both wrong. All you can do with the Jags fans is arrest them, fine them, and ban them, but you're just letting the players go. Michael Bennett, at the least, should have been suspended 2 games. Diving at a guy's knees in victory formation. It's about
trash. As
that goes right there with the Marshawn Lattimore hit from Mike Evans, right there with the Rob Gronkowski hit. Those guys shouldn't have missed a game. They should have missed 2, 3, 4 games. The NFL is just, they're just a pack of wusses, man. Unless it's Tom Brady, apparently. Fourth down.
I just agreed with you completely there.
You nodded your head. That was awesome.
Will the Green Bay Packers, even if Aaron Rodgers comes back this weekend, make the playoffs?
Great story. It's a really great story. No, they will not. No, they won't. No, they won't. They won't. I'm sorry, dude. I love Aaron Rodgers, and I root for him. And if anybody could do it, Aaron, could you're asking a guy to come back off a broken collarbone. And they're 7-6. Okay, I'm not going to say they're going to need to win out. They're going to need to, I would say, win 2 or 3.
They need to win out.
Okay, let's say they need to win out. I was trying to be fair. At Panthers, home Vikings, at Lions, No.
That's a brutal stretch of games.
That is
All three at home, I might like it more, but
2 on the road.
Yeah.
That is a, I would bet on 1-2. I would say 2-1 at best. You're not going 3-0, dude.
And if they do, I already think the highest of Aaron Rodgers, but if he comes back and wins those 3 games, I mean, what, do you hand him an MVP?
I
know you literally don't.
I'll tell you something right now, Kyle. If they come back and they go 3-0 and they make the playoffs, I'm putting them in the Super Bowl.
You have to.
I'm absolutely putting them in the Super Bowl. They're going to come out of nowhere and be the Super. They're going to be in the damn Super Bowl from the NFC.
What's amazing about Aaron Rodgers is the fact that we're even considering this.
Before we go to break,
please.
In 2013, this is amazing, Alabama's running back depth chart.
Sick.
T.J. Yeldon, Derrick Henry, Kenyon Drake, and Alvin Kamara.
And the year before that, they had Trent Richardson. And the year before that, they had Mark Ingram.
That's true. We'll take a break. When we get back, Samuel L. Amick will join us. We'll talk basketball, go around the league. And then at some point later on in that segment, I want to ask you about Tom Brady and LeBron James. We're seeing two old people do amazingly well. Why the hell are they doing it? Is this a coincidence, or are we talking modern science? We're back and forth. Sports 1140 KHDK. How long of this song can you play?
Enough.
Oh, old school.
This is the rejoiner playlist I put together for Damien.
Oh yeah.
And Jason, and I wanted to grab the Welcome Back song by Mace, and then I just haven't remember to open Spotify to grab your rejoiner. So I keep playing these.
Oh, no, man. Listen, this is one of the first rap albums I owned. It was
probably the first rap album a lot of people owned.
Let's see. Life Is Too Short, I think, was the first one I bought straight out of Compton. Right in there.
Easy Does It came out before Straight Outta Compton.
Easy, but I think I bought it after, if I'm being honest.
Okay,
I bought it
okay.
after Straight Outta Compton. And then the DOC's No One Could Do It Better, still probably my favorite cover-to-cover rap album of all time.
DOC's great.
That's my rap credentials for you. 339-1140-1-800-920.
First rap album you ever owned.
First rap album you
ooh,
ever bought.
We should
bought.
Ask Sam Amick that.
Is there a rap oldie station yet? I don't mean like locally yet. Yeah, because, you know, we don't want to, you know, hey, go listen to them, that type of thing. But
great point.
Is that a genre yet?
Oh, yes.
It is. So,
yes,
like, there are stations that play oldies like classic rock, but there's, like, classic rap now.
The moment I realized I was old was when I was listening to a throwback hip-hop station thing on my music app. And they were like, hey, here's more throwback hip hop. And it was a song that came out when I was in high school. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
44-11-40 on the text line. You got two guys that are mad at me about the George Hill topic. As Sam Amick's going to join us in just a second. From the 916, man, Dave, you're such a king's ass kisser. Of course you don't buy the George Hill rumors. There's anything the last few years have taught us, believe the rumors and leaks because most have pretty much come to light. You and management continue to BS us. And yes, George Hill is going to continue to do things with the public regardless of his feelings about the organization. The public isn't the one screwing him. Listen, all I said was they didn't gather the veterans up and tell them they were going to lose. That did not happen. Sorry. It didn't happen. Then I backed up and I told you that getting the pick and developing the youth are probably more important to this organization than winning. So what do you want from me? You want me just to agree with it just because that George Hill's just going to start leaking stuff? He's making $19 million a year. George Hill wants out. George Hill needs to play better. It's that simple. Joining us right now from USA Today, the one, the only, the corduroy-wearing caped crusader, Sam Amick. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Dave. I was trying to think about what you wear and to give you a witty response. Wow. I don't have any distinctive Dave sartorial
King's
sarcasm.
Gear.
Backwards hat, wearing King's gear in the media room. Like, come on, dude. Like, I can crack anyone for
King's quarter zip wearing Dave.
I was still in New Orleans for the Philadelphia Pelicans game. And I decided because I was there, I'd just go in and get some sound. So I'm going to start interviewing different players. Jrue Holiday had a great game. And I realized after being in the locker room for about 5 minutes that I had my Kings hat on backwards two nights after they'd won. So I like discreetly, before anyone caught me, took it off and then kind of tucked it into my pants and pulled my shirt over it. And I had just taken a shower at the hotel and rolled to the game. So I had... like, they had to be looking at me like, dude, this guy already looks goofy. But I had hat hair, shower head, the whole thing. So, Sam, I guess the whole story there is that I wouldn't worry about that.
That is fair. That is fair. This is, since we're on fashion, I went to the Blazers-Warriors game last night. And about once every 10 or 12 times that I put a suit on, I looked down and realized that I put colors on that are, the team of the night. So last night I unintentionally look like a Trailblazers honk with my black suit and my red shirt, and I was all blazered out. I was ready to roll.
Yeah, see, you got to go into that. The beat writer fashion. I think that's just T-shirt and jeans.
I did it for a long time. It's funny. I mean, I didn't do T-shirt and jeans, but I did the corduroy thing, which, is, if anybody wondered, is not a fake thing. I did wear corduroy jackets for years.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, part of it was when I was on the Kings beat, it's like, you're talking about 82 games, man. You know, I don't go to as many games now. So, we end up doing TV stuff and trying to be fancy pants. So you got to put the suit on every once in a while.
Are you buying this George Hill stuff? I don't know if I know you got to cover 30 teams and at least half on the west side of the world. The Salt Lake Tribune article, sources say George Hill is unhappy in that the vets were gathered before the season and told that the team's not interested in winning games. They're interested in a draft pick. We talked about that earlier. Are you buying a lot of that?
Yeah. I mean, the idea that that's where his head would be at, for sure. And, I mean, it's not hard to connect dots when it comes to story coming out of Salt Lake. You know, it's safe to assume that somebody connected with a George Hill associate. You know, or have the Kings been through there recently? Has that happened?
Through Utah? No, not that recently.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, not surprising. I didn't see, and I should have come better prepared, but did George say anything of consequence on that interview that I saw our buddy Sean Cunningham put up at his high school?
Actually, Kyle, we have this sound somewhere here. We can play it for Sam. Here you go. Here's what George said to Sean last night. I don't know how much you could hear through the phone. And I know that.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, so George isn't going to listen. George isn't going to come out if he is talking to the Salt Lake Tribune. He's not going to. He's probably not going to come out and double down on those comments at a charity event. But then, are we also buying that he's a good enough actor to be pissed off about his role and then come out the next day or 2 days later and say, hey, it's all about developing the youth and giving these guys the keys and having this opportunity, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into another reporter's
sure.
business too much in terms of sourcing, but I do feel confident. I mean, it's like that's your classic. I doubt George talked to the reporter, but it was probably one of his people. And you know, and that's typically how this thing goes. Somebody shares context and background about, you know, even the anecdote about what happened before the season is kind of typical, where you know, you share something that at the time wasn't all that relevant, but now it's you got a little bit of frustration, and so you tell a reporter that, you know, this isn't what we signed up for. This is what happened in the preseason. They said this, and now they're doing that. So you know, and it keeps some of the blood off George's hands, so to speak. And he kind of is able to walk that line and say the right things like he did to Sean. I mean, partly because politically it's smarter that way. And then also because, you know, there are rules about this stuff. You know, if you complain too much and say I want out, then then you have an Eric Bledsoe situation where you're getting fined by the NBA, you know, for publicly requesting or pushing for a trade. So it's not a shocker. I mean, it's not what I thought it was going to be. You know, I thought that it was going to be more of a seamless integration of the young and the old in Sac. And it's been like one extreme or the other. It's been a young guy, you know, having a good night and doing good things and taking minutes away from an older guy. And then it's been Zach Randolph, you know, channeling his younger self and being like an all-star level player on some nights. So, you know, I get some of the frustration.
Sam Amick with us, USA Today. Can't be too big of a surprise to these veterans. You know, and I understand that Scott Perry was here during those signings. I can't imagine Scott telling them you're getting 40 minutes a night. You know, they had to kind of understand coming in this is a rebuilding situation. It seemed like that was pretty clear in the offseason, and they were in sort of a tutoring role, tutoring mode coming into this year.
I agree. I mean, you're hitting on something key, which is what did Scott tell them? And what was the vibe? And even if it wasn't that different from what's happening, you know, I feel like whether it's basketball, business, whatever, like, you know, that kind of human experience of one guy paints a picture of what a certain thing is going to look like. And when that person's gone, you know, you got a little bit less trust. Those memories of, wait, but you said this, you don't have anybody to circle back with and say, hey, this isn't what we talked about. And, you know, Vlade, I'm sure, obviously, was a heavy part of those discussions. But, you know, there was a sense at that time that there was a certain level of trust and faith that came with Scott being around because, by and large, players in the league, they certainly know who the heck Vlade is. But I think in terms of relationships and having, you know, a certain level of trust, you know, Scott's built up a lot over the years. So, you know, I'm just kind of speculating. But, I mean, I agree. They can't be shocked. But obviously it's not exactly what George thought he was getting into.
Sam Amick joining us. I want to jump around here a little bit too. Having spent a couple of days watching games in New Orleans, and I get very sensitive about ripping other fan bases or just being negative, because in every town there are a ton of diehard fans. And I get that it was also the Kings and then the Sixers, and the Sixers are a bit better of a draw than the Kings. But just spending time in that city and talking to people and making it a point to talk to people at the game and around the game, that is a Saints town. That is not a Pelicans town. And the attendance showed that. You've got Robert Parra bleeding money in Memphis. You've got the Pelicans in trouble attendance-wise and perhaps personnel-wise. We talked about this a few weeks back on the show, Sam, and now Seattle has just approved a $600 million renovation to Key Arena. It looks like they're getting the NHL. Should Seattle fans, and this is all speculation, obviously, but should Seattle fans start feeling a little bit hopeful here?
I think so. I mean, there's progress. You know, certainly the arena front and what happened there and the – you know, the support from local officials is big. The missing piece of the puzzle is, you know, is it expansion? Is it, you know, relocation? What are we looking at here? And the New Orleans thing, even since the time we talked about it last, has not gotten better. And we talked before, they've got a lot on the line. So I don't know what it looks like. I also, one thing I need to get clarity on is just the idea that, you know, in the post-Sacramento-Seattle saga story, what's the current state of the relationship between the league office and Chris Daniels?
Chris Hansen.
Hansen, sorry.
Yeah, no, I got you. Chris Daniels, the reporter. Yeah. I do the same thing.
Because that matters. Because there were kind of, I know it's business, but there were hurt feelings before. That's a weird way of putting it. But, you know, the league felt like, you know, like Chris Hansen essentially tried to, at the time with Steve Ballmer, to play by his own rules and not the NBA does kind of want you to kiss the ring a little bit and you know, do the thing the way they tell you to do it. And those guys didn't do it at the time. They thought if you could cut a big enough check, then it didn't matter how you comported yourself. So I wonder about that a little bit. I think they've healed those wounds. But yeah, I mean, Seattle folks should get, you know, somewhat optimistic. But they've been down this road before, and I guarantee you they're like the scorned lover that's, you know, not about to let you hurt them again. Like, they've been crushed before, but it does seem like it's going in a certain direction.
Sam Amick, USA Today, joining us. Looks like a pair of balls is going to Lithuania as LiAngelo and – you know, I waited a long time for that. LiAngelo and LaMelo sign a one-year pro deals. That's just weird. And one of them's –
Ballsy move.
I mean, did I say two pairs of balls? I'm sorry. Kyle's in my ear now. It's two balls in Lithuania. Here's the deal. One of them's a prospect. One of them doesn't seem to be, like, much of a prospect. But neither of them are now going to college. Here's my question. I don't have a question for you. Wow, Sam got mad at that joke. Get him back with you. Here's my question, Sam. Oh, that, there's times when you want to lose a guest, and there's times when you don't.
I'm cutting that for a promo.
When you don't want to lose a guest. Well, as we get Sam Amick back here, LiAngelo and LaMelo Ball, you have heard, have reached an agreement to sign professional basketball deals with Lithuanian club Prienų Vytautas, according to I completely... completely nailed that. The team's coach / GM, Virginijus Seskis, announced. I feel like I nailed Virginijus Seskis. And Harrison Gaines, the Ball family agent. There we go. Talk about bad time to lose your guest, Sam. Jeez.
Sorry.
My God. You couldn't have hung up at any other point in the show.
What did I miss?
You know, while we were talking about the balls in Lithuania, here's my question in all seriousness. Is there a place in your mind where, forget all the Kardashian ball, you know, hype and blah, blah, whatever. Is this a harbinger, perhaps, of... Or could we be on the cusp, Sam, of seeing perhaps between the G League and other pro leagues? Could we be on the cusp of seeing perhaps a fundamental change in the landscape of college basketball and maybe a lot more top prospects choosing G League, choosing professional status rather than going to college, or is this just, you know, you think an isolated ball thing?
I could see it. I do think that, man, I'm trying to think. I had a conversation recently with somebody about that and just that idea that, you know, it's kind of reaching the tipping point and the threshold of players feeling exploited by the NCAA and then just the idea that, you know, what are we getting out of this? If I could go play somewhere else, and, you know, take a different path to the same end result and not, and I hate to say it as somebody who certainly, a lot of these players, they're going to wind up needing their education because they're not going to make it. But, you know, we all know that plenty of these players, that the education is certainly not even a side thing. It's a distant aspect to what they're doing. So I could see it. You know, look at Ben Simmons and how he has talked about his LSU experience. And he did an interview recently where he was attempting to talk about the value of being hurt last year and kind of the college of, you know, Sixers that he went through as a injured rookie and what it meant and how important it was to his basketball career. But he did so in the context of kind of bashing LSU and kind of scoffing at just, you know, what that chapter actually meant for him and his story. And it obviously is not one that he's going to really hold dearly. So, you know, I could see that. Now, the ball thing is the extreme. I think it's just crazy. I don't pretend to know the international leagues all that well, but certainly what I've read and heard is that the Lithuanian league that they're in is very low level, and it's almost a pride thing that they were so determined to show that they're big ballers and they do what they want that, you know, they went and got themselves overseas contracts, and it's take that UCLA. But, you know, like everybody said on Twitter yesterday, you're literally, you know, Lithuania or Los Angeles. Yeah, I'm not sure which one you'd rather play ball in. You know, people who know them, I had one guy in particular hit me up yesterday and play a little prediction game saying there's no way they're going to be there more than 2 months, that it was just to send a message and there's going to be a new twist and turn coming up. But I know you weren't trying to talk balls. I mean, I do think what you're talking about is real, and not only because of those reasons, but the G League is getting bigger and better. And the NBA is, I think, doing a nice job of finding ways to legitimize it and make those players feel like they're not, you know, metaphorically playing in Lithuania when they're playing in small little American cities. So I think that part helps too.
It's interesting when you look at, and we saw the G League is moving fast to get a team in Mexico City, whether that's a harbinger of expansion down there. And we talked about Seattle. Maybe that's your other.
By the way.
It is what?
It is a harbinger of putting a team down. I mean, Adam Silver is very, very focused on Mexico City. And I didn't mean to interrupt you, but like that harbinger of potentially adding a team in Mexico City, an NBA team.
Okay.
I just don't know if he's going to get his way. There's obstacles economically and socially that have to get, you know, resolved. But Adam's really focused on Mexico City.
With how predatorial, which A, probably isn't a word, and B, you know what I mean, the NBA tends to be with their business and growing the game itself. I do wonder why, and we talked a bit about this last week, Sam, why they don't revamp the G League or continue to boost it. And perhaps in the next CBA, the middle ground for the G League and for the 18, you know, the one and done, is allowing these kids to be drafted into the G League, but they have to play a year in the G League until they're 19 years old or 18 or whatever, however you want to put it. And instead of seeing these top-level kids, these Marvin Bagleys and DeAndre Ayton's and all that playing for free in college, they go to the G League, they're paid, they're insured, they're the property of a team, but they're not playing in the real NBA yet. The NBA gets the profit, the colleges don't. I'm curious as to why the NBA hasn't moved in that direction more aggressively.
I think because of political reasons and relationships with people in the NCAA. I think there's been, you know, kind of a synergy between those two institutions that Adam doesn't take lightly. And if you remember when he first came into the position and taking over for Stern, one of the first talking points that he started, you know, hitting on was that he wanted a minimum 2 years in college. And, you know, and now we're all of a sudden he's, you know, he's losing that battle and it's swinging the other way potentially. But that was where he began. He was trying to, you know, almost kind of help the NCAA, and then he argued at the time that it would help the.
We just lost Sam again. Oh, there we go. You're back.
It was using the NCAA even more as a developmental, you know, place than they do now. I think, you know, I do wonder over time if his change in stance doesn't lead to what you're talking about. We have two-way contracts now. You know, do we have another version of that where these guys get drafted down there and play over there? I mean, the other argument is, I mentioned Ben Simmons, you know, even guys who, like, have a redshirt year in the NBA, to a man, like, every person who's done that unintentionally in the NBA, Blake Griffin, Nick Collison is one that somebody mentioned to me a little while ago. Well, they get hurt and they miss their first year, and they end up always talking about how much better it made their actual rookie season when it finally arrived. I mean, what you learn being around an NBA team and becoming a pro and just the way you handle the daily rhythm of it all, I think it's, you just can't tell someone about it. You got to live it. I think that part's interesting too.
I got a chance to see Ben Simmons up close on Sunday. This guy gets an outside shot. It's not out of the ballpark. He's a top five player in the league. Would you agree or buy or sell that, Sam? Fact or fiction?
Fact. No, for sure. He could. He might wind. I mean, he's going to wind up being a top five player in the league without it.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, there. It's crazy how he gets to the rim, and he looks so smooth that you know his speed is deceptive, and you know he's got a quick first step, and he's smart, and he sees passing lanes, and the height obviously is big, and you know, it's no pun intended, but he's pretty special. I'm always big on just, all right, what do the players themselves say? Because you know, they're the real experts, and to hear other players rave about Ben Simmons is kind of all you got to hear. It's, you know, he's doing this stuff again. It's a quote unquote rookie, it's the second year, but he's really special. And then I keep, you know, I'm on Team Embiid when it comes to just hoping that Joel stays healthy, because you really could have. Yeah, I know this is hyperbole, like admittedly, but them at their best feels like. You could have like a Kobe Shaq type dynamic that would be a lot of fun.
I think that's hyperbole at all. I think if you told me that Simmons and Embiid were going to average 70 games over the next 10 years, I would bet the Sixers are going to have a couple of rings in that. They're just so damn good and different, really, from almost every other player at their position. That Sam Amick, he writes for USA Today. His drunk neighbor John keeps texting in. Apparently you're in a Christmas lights war. Yeah, he says you're not getting any more lights, and they will respond. So we'll keep an eye on that.
That's actually fun. This is the first time that he usually gets me on the air.
Yeah.
Now, I'm kind of getting hit because the backstory that you don't know is that I have not gotten – that's the first response I got out of John when I snuck on the second story of my house and added more lights, and I had not gotten a response. That makes my day that John noticed, and he's not happy.
You're in his head, Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's losing.
Yeah.
He's losing. Yeah. The Emick family is losing their savings as well, but that's a whole other story.
Sam Griswold, USA Today. You can follow him online at Sam Amick on the Twitter machine. We'll get an update on that next Tuesday. Always good talking to you, buddy.
All right, buddy. Thanks, Dave.
Take care. All right, that is Sam Amick. Katie Christensen is parading around the studio. She will join us next, and we'll get into King Suns tonight. I'll ask her about the whole George Hill situation. And, hey, what the hell does Buddy Hield have to do to start? Just asking. Not advocating. Just asking. He's been pretty damn good.
Stop playing so well off the bench.
We're back in four. The drive continues right here on Sports 1140 KHCK.